This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. My name is Kelsey Pritchard, and I'm the Communications Director in the Governor's Office. Just a reminder for everyone on the phone, you can mute your lines by pressing star 6, and during Q&A, you can unmute by pressing pound 6. And a reminder to everyone in the room to use the mics at the table as well. With that, I'll turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels.
Thank you very much, and thank you for everybody who's called in and is here. And it's such an incredible, important part of our process in the nation to be able to cover what the Citizens Legislature is doing. And so thank you for doing that and look forward to any questions. Obviously, everyone knows the governor is in Washington, D.C. and just witnessed a transfer of power that was peaceful. I think that's an amazing thing that we talk about quite a bit, regardless of our beliefs of who should be or we want to have president. I have lived in a country where that transition was not peaceful and people actually gave their lives for a belief that they had. And speaking of that, we have individuals for the first time from our Army and Air Guard that are actually out there, close to 150 airmen, and that includes women. We refer to them as airmen, as well as soldiers, providing support and security perimeter work during the festivities that are still going on. The governor visited them yesterday, and it was really a momentous event. And so, obviously, from that, all of the news really is of the day and probably takes the oxygen out of the earth of what this means for our nation and for our world as we transition. And I want to bring it closer to home. And the governor testified yesterday in front of a roundtable with Senate Finance Committee individuals. And in that testimony, he talked a great deal about what we have as issues in South Dakota relative to taking care of the poor relative to health care or Medicaid. And after we're done, we will be sending out an update of what happened there, as well as letters that were submitted to the committee for consideration in terms of the modification of not only the Affordable Care Act, but also what may or may not happen relative to Medicaid. I don't want to get into that piece because of the limited time that we have, but what I want to talk about is actually our number one priority. And the governor spoke about it, has been vehement about it. You have covered it in the Medicaid expansion area, and that has to do with fixing this reimbursement issue for taking care of our Native Americans. The way that I express this in no uncertain terms is an example, and I really implore all of you in the coverage and your professions to continue to dig into this topic, cover it, try to educate the listeners, the viewers, the readers on how important this is. And this is how it works in my mind. I'm a veteran. I'm a Navy veteran. If I wanted to and needed care at the Veterans Administration and qualified, which I would be on a lower preference, but qualified and went and got care there, and hypothetically, let's say that care was $10,000 worth of care. You, as a state taxpayer, everybody on this phone, everyone who's participating in whatever is consuming your information, does pay taxes, state taxes. That's what funds our purpose, our needs, and what we're debating. If I told you that this federal obligation for taking care of me as a veteran was $10,000, but $5,000, that is half of that, was being paid for by the state taxpayer, you would squint and go, well, that makes no sense. Why would we pay for a federal obligation? Another example, you have a friend who's a mail carrier, and she gets health insurance. And what if I told you that, boy, by virtue of the federal government's rules, we as local taxpayers have to pay half of that premium for her with state tax dollars? You'd go, that's wrong. What if I told you about people who work for a U.S. Attorney's Office or people who are employed by BLM or the Forest Service or the National Park Service, and that we were picking up as state taxpayers, not their federal obligation, but state taxpayers, half of what their health care costs were? I would think that if that came to light, every one of you would report on how wrong that is, a ripoff, or something is totally wrong. What are we going to do about it? That's exactly the situation we have here and what has evolved over decades in the way that the federal government has abysmally, essentially used our state tax dollars to take care of our citizens who happen to be Native Americans. We have close to, I think, 37% of individuals in our Medicaid program, 35% of individuals who are in a Medicaid program that happen to be American Indian. In other words, these are individuals by virtue of belonging to tribes in this state. The federal government made a deal, and that deal is as a birthright, you get health care. And that health care might be through IHS or might be through facilities that don't get any reimbursement. But when they do get reimbursed, we are paying for it when it's in any other facility other than an IHS facility. We're paying for that with our state tax dollars. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a moral imperative, and I get very, very, very concerned about the fact that this essentially takes off of our bottom line $93 million. In this current budget, that was in 16, FY16. It's hard to predict how it'll be in the future. But in FY14, let's do some math. In fiscal year 14, it was $74 million that we had to pick up of this federal obligation. $85 million the next year when we first met with the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And now it's 93 in FY16, and we're right in the middle of 17. So if you do your progression, it only gets uglier. Now, I believe that there's a larger issue as a nurse, as somebody who's worked in healthcare, taking care of people, as seeing people that are in those systems of Indian Health Service. I want to set that aside because that is a big issue. It is a moral issue as it relates to quality. I am talking about a solution, though, that's economic, and we could get to discussions on how we would take care of them, but we have a rip in our state treasury bag of your money of $93 million. And if we have that, a lot of the discussions that you've heard today and our budget discussions would be actually in the pathway of saying, hey, how can we take care of all people that happen to be poor? As you've heard the governor talk about it. And so I reiterate, and it's in our media release to you when I'm done, that the governor and I, our administration, expressed that fixing this reimbursement issue is our number one priority, and that we are urging the Senate in his presentation to consider this issue when they're working on the repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act. I'll repeat, it is the number one priority, and I'm grateful for you listening to those opening comments and your willingness to consider that and continue to cover it. And when the governor gets back, he will certainly talk with you more about how that was received. And I'll repeat, we'll be releasing this out, and Kelsey will talk about it right as we close. And then you'll be able to see the letters, which are extremely well done by our team. And we were asked by the Finance Committee to submit this information and other people. And so you'll be able to have that, post it, show it to people, and it'll probably be more concise, not probably, mostly more concise than me. So, okay. Any questions?
What kind of willingness from the congressional delegation, or you know, even just federal delegation who's dealing with that? What kind of willingness have you received so far to fix this issue that you're talking about?
Thank you, Lee, for picking up on that. The governor and I have had conversations with the congressional delegation, and they are very fast on the uptake. They understand the issue as it was laid out. It is not an easy issue to understand. So we've walked the teams through it, and each one of our congressional delegation have individuals that are our point people for that in both the senator's and the congresswoman's offices. And we're sending information. We sent this information to them as to the presentation of the Finance Committee. Finance Committee invite was part of working with Senator Thunes and Senator Round's offices, and very, very receptive. I would tell you that even way back when Governor Rounds was governor, this was a murky issue, and I was Speaker Lee. We brought this up because it comes to light in the issues of some of the horrific conditions in the Indian Health Service facilities. There are very good people in the Indian Health Service facilities trying to provide care. Those are buildings with people trying to provide care, not like as an employee of SD Public Broadcasting, you can go through the state process and you've got a card and go to Vermilion or Pier. These individuals have to go to their facility or they don't get care. And so that's a whole different piece. And so talking them through the funding versus if you're going to change the way that states are going to be funded with Medicaid, remember we have this bogey that is a federal obligation that the federal government has never acknowledged is their obligation. And so to put a finer point on it, we believe they understand it. We're not going to lose sight of it. That's why it's our number one priority. And the congressional delegation understands the complexity, but more importantly, how we need to be made whole.
Do you see it as a funding issue or more of an institutional issue with IHS?
They're both. Yeah. You know, it could be the equivalent if you think of your own health insurance issues. Again, you can shop for care to whatever you need. You're young, so you probably haven't had much health care. But an old guy like me needed back surgery after the flood. I had the ability under the health plan that I had to choose different places based on how much I wanted to have come out of my pocket. If that is the issue, it is whether or not you have the flexibility to go to various facilities. So if you're a Native American, and the majority of Native Americans in our state don't live on reservations, and so you happen to be in Rapid City with your family, heaven forbid you're going to be with your family and you get ill and you have to go to the hospital, for a lot of those individuals there's no coverage. And if there is coverage, it's through a Medicaid program taking care of people who are the poor, and our program doesn't cover everyone. In fact, a single male that might have, you know, broken a leg in a motorcycle accident or something like that, there would be no coverage for it. And so Rapid City Regional would have to provide that care with no compensation, and everyone else would pay for it. So really, the issue is you fix it for wherever they're going to get the work. Senator Rounds wants an audit of IHS, all of those other things. Those are very, very important, and I don't want to set them aside. But our number one priority is give us our money back so that then we can take care of people, irrespective then of whether they're poor because they happen to be in Corson County as an individual up there taking care of kids, or it happens to be an enrolled member of the Cheyenne. It's a great question, though. Thank you.
What? Matt, can I follow up on that? Was the deal contingent on Medicaid expansion? Is that going to be an issue, or do you see this as a separate matter that can be resolved with IHS reimbursement?
Is that Randy?
Yeah, yes it is.
Hi, Randy.
Sorry, I didn't introduce myself.
No problem. I just know your lovely voice, melodic voice. there is no Medicaid expansion anymore. There is some discussion you'll see in these materials that from not only conversations the governor has had with the vice president, now the vice president Pence, and all of the testimony from yesterday, individuals that there are states that have already expanded, and the governor wants to make it very clear that because we've been efficient, because we don't hire third parties to manage this program, because we have stricter rules, that we don't want to be penalized for being good and not expanding. And so Governor Pence in Indiana expanded Medicaid. Obviously, Governor Kasich, who we've communicated with quite a bit in Ohio, expanded Medicaid. Governor Walker and Wisconsin expanded Medicaid. So these are three red states. I think people would say that Ohio is a mix. But the true concepts of Medicaid expansion, that door is shut. What is not shut is these issues of then how are you going to give us funds for a continuation of this program? And there's a pretty good pathway for that. There's a document that the Republican caucus put out under Ryan, now Speaker Ryan, called A Better Way. And in A Better Way, they describe their alternatives, and it's fairly clear what they're trying to do. And the governor is saying, those are all fine and dandy, but when you get into the details, here are the priorities. Number one, make sure that the Native American obligation is taken care of, that $93 million. Number two, ensure that we aren't penalized for being efficient and effective. And three, give us flexibility so that if we want a work requirement, which we would, there are some people that can't work, in sense. And indeed, a vast majority, a lot of people who are in Medicaid that aren't elderly are working poor. So hopefully, too, in addition to just my blathering, Randy, that the materials that you'll receive out of our media team here from Kelsey will also help you elaborate on that.
Okay, thank you. So you can move forward on the IHS question. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yep, thanks.
Other questions on the phone line? Patrick, you have a question?
Regarding the administration and the transition now to President Trump, are there channels open? Have we had other discussions beyond just Medicare, but just in a general sense, how's that transition going to a new presidency?
Well, to my knowledge, we haven't had any direct other than the governor meeting with then-governor, Vice President-elect Pence, and they have a relationship. He actually, when they met with other governors, gave the governor's cell number so that if there was a direct issue, he's a governor, and he understands issues directly. He's been in Congress, and so that's a pretty good pipeline. Concomitantly, we have developed a lot of materials that have been asked for through our various organizations and our congressional delegation. For example, just yesterday, working, I have responsibility for the military, as you know, veteran to veteran. What might happen within military construction? Is there a desire to kind of ramp up some of that construction for the infrastructure support piece that the president campaigned on? So it's mostly in those formative stages. And, of course, a number of these departments are sort of frozen at this point in time because their leads are gone. A number of our contacts are there, but they don't know what to do. So that's the extent of it. In addition to that, the governor, you know, will go out later in this session for his National Governors Association meeting, and so probably develop even more then. We do know, independent of media coverage, things are moving quickly.
I don't want to monopolize the time. Your reaction to the appointment nomination of Governor Sonny Perdue as Ag Secretary, so, agriculture being our number one industry here in South Dakota, what does this mean for South Dakota, and what are your first thoughts?
You know, this is going to surprise you. I don't have any. I don't know who he is. I would digress and say that in our experiences, a lot of these things are developed by very good relationships by our Secretary of Ag, Jaspers, and our predecessors that they have with various individuals and organization divisions within the ag community, and not only from you know, a lobbying on Congress perspective, but also the areas of just different departments. It does prompt one memory, and having lived overseas, that Secretary Jaspers and I did talk about, that they're all watching and everybody's watching, is the trade issues. When you talk about trade with various countries, and regardless of the hyperbole, our number one country that we trade with is Canada, by far. Our number two is Mexico, and then it starts dropping off to China and some of those other things. But Mexico is the number one product that we export is pork there. And I was at the border a couple of months ago in Nogales and saw the trade that was coming back and forth there. As you and I have talked about, it was intriguing to me and educational, having been around borders in the world, how much of our produce comes through that corridor. About 60% of the nation's produce comes through that single corridor because it's a direct line down to a lot of farming. So I had a salad. There's a salad waiting for me later this afternoon. All of that salad came through that port. And because obviously there's no salad being grown, inputs being grown too many places in the United States during the winter months. And of course, then we talked about a very serious issue, and that's the drug trafficking that comes through. So one of those points that we continue to see, and I see in the press a lot, is the trade issues. And do we have an imbalance? You know, what are we going to do relative to tariffs? And that's something that the ag community and the Association of Agricultural Secretaries and Organizations are watching very, very carefully.
Yeah, back to the IHS thing. What can the state of South Dakota do what can the state of South Dakota do force the hand of the federal government to help reimburse a lot of that money you were talking about? And what are states like New Mexico doing?
Really great question. And if you're also interested in doing a deeper dialogue or a focus or something on that, Lee, we've got a tremendous amount of information on it, and probably one of the experts in the nation now, who's our Secretary of Department of Health, and Kim Molson-Risen's been working with CMS. I'll briefly take you back to the beginning. I have known about this for quite a long time. The people in the federal government weren't aware of it, and as we explained it and went out there quite a bit, there's always the confusion, a logical one, the same way that you asked the question of IHS should be taking care of people. But no, this is really the gasoline for the car. It's the card. You know, if I was in the military and decided I didn't want to go to the VA, I could get what's called a TRICARE. And you can still go around. It's just it's a different mechanism of giving care that doesn't lock you in. And so when we were explaining that, and that's a deterrent to care, and that people don't want to go there, we had some pretty significant horror stories.
1,000 signatures that were submitted, 330,000
signatures
that were submitted to
some noise on the line. Can you all make sure your lines are muted? Star 6.
And so we had a couple of meetings with the Secretary of Health and Human Services, who is no longer, but at the same time, Tom Price, the potentially incoming, he's going through, is very familiar with this subject and understands it. He's a quick study. He's a healthcare practitioner. And we really think that we are the most optimistic because the approach that we had was cobbled together through having some sort of connection with IHS versus trying to free up these funds and find other ways to take care of our people. Our people who are South Dakotans, they happen to have another mechanism for care, but that was their birthright. That was the deal. I have an entitlement if I need it for veteran care, and I don't need it. I have other coverage. And so I think that I am so grateful that you asked these questions, because I think that it is one that could continue to be followed and be highlighted, because very few people understood.
We had to sample 5% of the staff of four.
Still hearing some news reports over the line, so please mute your line. Star 6.
And really, the jump start to this was many years ago, as I was talking with the governor. when we were first dialoguing this, you know, about a year after we got into session, I said, you know, there was a Supreme Court case, there was a federal case that we brought, you know, the state brought to say, hey, this is your obligation. And we got it shoved in our face because
all the signatures.
So we got it shoved in our face because of the fact that Medicaid program is just a program where funds are given and you must take care of all of those individuals. So it's not the easiest topic to write about, and that's why I'm asking for you as excellent communicators to help us, because we're optimistic. It's not going to be lost. Our congressional delegation understands it. You can explain that this is broader than just an individual getting Indian Health Services on an Indian Health Service facility, that if we had those funds, we could find other ways to take care of people too, whether it's telehealth, and of course this is the nurse in me, or other ways to make sure that this population is taken care of. So
we have time for one more question. Patrick?
As we look forward to week three, what are your tactical plans for what are you going to be advancing, what are you going to be doing from the executive branch to move forward in week three? What can people at home listening and reading expect to see in this week ahead?
You know, I think that you've actually covered it well in talking to the respective leaderships, the individuals that are, you know, the individual issues that are ripe are the IM-22, discussion repealer, and that in terms of that discussion next week, I think will be on the horizon, and you'll see that. I understand that that's probably going to be a bill that will be introduced today and calendared for a committee sometime next week. You know, the other things that I think are important for people to follow, and it's hard, you know, we have different choices in life, is to listen into the debate on the Senate floor, talking about the opioid issues and prescriptions and people that might have that demon that's on the Senate floor. And, you know, as is common, having been here a long time, and as I call myself a gray beard, it always starts slower because people, especially at first term, are trying to figure out, is this something that's been tried? What are the issues? And should we work through these? And constituents realize that the session's in. So you have a lot of interesting smaller items coming up. What I love about that question, Patrick, is there's nothing directly, vehemently that we're working on because it's a legislative process. And we're asked a lot with our teams to give input, and we do have a number of bills that we have put in for clarity and for trying to improve, and obviously various hearings, but there's no real one shining star thing that we're working on. But again, we have the most open process where people can log on, watch a bill, listen to everybody. It's archived. We are one of very few states where every bill that's introduced has to be calendared and has to be debated. Whether it's in a committee or eventually gets to a floor, it has to have this discussion. And in this day and age, there's a lot of discussion that comes on topics and people respond to it in terms of your publicity, but also individuals who are watching it. So stay tuned, and I really thank you again for covering and your interest in all of this. It's an important part of the process, and we can never lose it. So thank you, and have a safe weekend.
Yeah, thank you.